Evenings with Kylie Baxter on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
Time now for Classic Car Talk Back. And during tonight's segment, I want to propose a challenge. Well, it does relate to the Giving Tree because we've only got one day left. Tomorrow is the last day that we can donate to get on to this year's tally. Sometimes people donate later, but it has to tick over to the following year. So we're trying to get as much as we can in the next 24 hours. So if you're listening and you own a beautiful classic car, maybe you've got an Aston Martin. I know there's a few Aston Martins in Hobart, a collectible Porsche or a mint condition. You know what I love? I love Austin Healey's. Maybe consider logging on abc.net.au/givingtree and donating if you can. And in the donation, tell us what kind of car you own, because everyone listening right now absolutely loves classic cars. But of course, we do love all donations, big and small, from anyone that's willing. And you don't have to leave your name, by the way, if you don't want to, but you can also leave a message. You can leave your name. Don't have to leave your name. It's just whatever you want to do. I am joined now by Mark Haybittle from Supercar Secrets. Good evening, Mark.
Yes, good evening, Collie. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. How's your week been? Only 10 days until Christmas. It seems amazing.
Is it that close?
It is.
Really that close?
It sure is. Now, you heard me talking about the Giving Tree, which is such a great thing. It helps raise money for people struggling with the cost of living. I feel like I want to phone up Nick Mason from Pink Floyd to donate, because I can't believe this story. He owns a car that's increased in value so much it's almost impossible to fathom. Tell us this story.
Yeah, look, it's one of 39 Ferrari 250 GTOs, and he bought that car back in 1978 for 35,000 British pounds. And those cars, I think in the recent article, it indicated a figure of 40 million, but to be fair, they've well passed that figure now. They're sort of in the 70s. 70 to 80 million now.
That just seems ridiculous.
GTO.
He bought it for £35,000 and it's now worth £40 million.
Yeah, so if you calculate it, even if it was 40, and it's not, I mean, we're handling a couple at the moment and they're worth a lot more than that, but even if it was 40, given that it's around 40 years, that's $1 million a year.
Unbelievable. You wouldn't really drive a car like that. Would you have it in a museum or, you know, undercover in some sort of lockup? Very expensive garage.
Yeah, look, interesting enough, and once again, there are only 39 in the world of the 250 GTOs, but Nick's particular GTO, he drives it on the road pretty well every day. He runs his kids to school in it.
It's quite in his £40 million car.
Yeah, absolutely, predominantly because he's owned it since it was a £35,000 car, and he's had it all that time since 1978. So he doesn't see it any differently to what it was then, you know.
And so did you know if he used it as collateral when he owned it, when it obviously kept increasing in value during the years of, you know, Pink Floyd, when they were, you know, coming up through the ranks and maybe weren't as financially well off as the band members are now?
Well, that's right. When they came to do, I think, The Wall and The Division, the Division Tree after that, Division Bell, sorry. It was The Division Bell that needed some extra collateral, so he put that car up as security for that album, for The Division Bell.
Yeah, wow. But have you ever seen Pink Floyd? Are you a fan?
I absolutely worship the ground upon which they walk. I've met all the band members.
No way. Have you?
Yeah, we ended up by default, because we're in the collectible car industry, we ended up knowing Nick through that, and then that introduced us to Roger Waters and so on from there. And even as a young kid, I went to the Wall concert that was in Earl's Court. It was just mind-boggling. I always remember thinking that I'd always see another concert like that with Stuka dive bombers diving into the stage and then building a wall, you know, 40 feet high in front of me and all that. I thought I'd see loads of those things in my life, you know, after that. I was just a kid at the time. But you know what? I've never, ever seen a concert like that ever again. It was mind-boggling then, and it's actually mind-boggling to think of it now. It was just the most amazing thing I ever experienced.
And sorry, where exactly was that when you saw that concert?
That was seeing The Wall in at Earl's Court in London.
Oh, nice. What a good location.
And I won't bore you with all the details.
I'm enjoying all the details.
Well, just tell me when to stop, because I remember it like it was yesterday, and I remember going into the Earls Court Auditorium, and Pink Floyd being Pink Floyd, they never do anything the same as anybody else, and we sat in, myself and a good friend, we sat down in our chairs amongst probably, I think it was about 130,000 people, and Pink Floyd just turned all the lights out for 5 minutes.
Why?
So we were sitting in total blackness for 5 minutes with 130,000 people that we didn't know, and it just accelerated from there. Like, it was just the most mind-boggling thing I've ever seen.
And so during that time, were they playing as you were in the dark? I'm assuming they're on stage playing.
No, nothing. That was
silence.
The funny thing. Total silence. Nobody on the stage. Nothing happening, just silence. And because Earl's Court was covered in at that point, it was pitch black. It was an amazing experience. And then we moved on to spaceships taking off from the sides of the stage after that, after the five-minute darkness. And then a full-sized Stuka dive bomber went diagonally from one side of the auditorium to the other and crashed into the stage and blew up. And it just went on from there. And then gradually during the concert, they actually build a wall between you and the band. It wasn't 40 feet high. It was more like 100 feet high. It was a phenomenal thing built out of polystyrene blocks. And they build that up between you and them. And then when they get to do the track called Comfortably Numb with Dave Gilmour, with the amazing guitar solo that he does with that, he's sitting on the top of the wall about 100 feet in the air.
What a spectacle.
Amazing.
Yeah. And now, before we get back on to talking about classic cars, what was the concert? Because they seem to have different, everyone remembers the different concerts over the years. What's the one where they had like the flying pig through the air that ran?
That was it.
I saw that same version of the concert, not at Earls Court, but at Fremantle Oval, of all places, Perth in Western Australia.
I did 12 years in Western Australia, and I remember that exact concert with revolving wheel. There was a big wheel that went round.
Yeah, that's the one.
That was it. I saw the pig. So that was without Roger Waters, you may recall, though.
I didn't really know them that well at the time. I was pretty young, obviously, and I just sort of went along, and it was all a bit new to me, and I wasn't so, you know what I mean, I wasn't a diehard Pink Floyd fan. And so have you got a favourite Pink Floyd song? I might play it at the end of the segment.
Comfortably Numb.
Comfortably Numb?
Comfortably Numb, because that sort of sums it all up, and it sums that period of time up.
Yeah.
But just to go back to that Freo concert, I remember that very clearly, and it was, if I recall correctly, the sun was going down as all that happened, wasn't it?
Yes, that was it, yep.
But what an awesome thing that was. I mean, that was good, but seeing the wall in Earls Court, mind-boggling.
Yeah, can't compare.
Just being a kid, I just thought, oh, I'll just see loads of stuff like that in my life, you know, like that'll just happen over and over again.
And it didn't. Yeah. Hey, if anyone is listening right now and you've seen Pink Floyd in concert, we'd love it if you'd call up and share the story with us at 1300 222 936. I know there are people listening right now who would have seen Pink Floyd in concert, so please share 1300 222 936. But if you're not prepared to do that because you just don't want to talk on the radio, we understand. So text 0438 922 936. Getting back to classic cars, which we love to talk about, Mark Habiddle. Jan in Newtown says, I don't own one, but I've always loved Mini Miners. She said, how are they going at the moment? And she said, and what about Mini Majors? Is that a joke, that last part? Is there Mini Majors?
No.
No, I think she's joking. So how are the Mini Miners going?
They're kind of two different cars. There's an Austin Major, and there's the Austin Mini. And Minis, as you and I have often spoken about, you know, they've gone completely through the roof. You know, the little Series 1 Mini, which was 61 through to 66, even an ordinary one of those is probably better to talk about them in English pounds, because they're worth more over there. So they're £40,000, so about $80,000 for a little Mini now.
Yeah, not bad, is it? That's the one I told you about on another segment that my grandma had, one of the very originals. It was bright yellow, and my grandfather bought it for her when it was a very long time ago. But I remember she just always loved that car. Yeah, so I pity she didn't hold on to it. She's not here anymore, but it would have been collectible today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Minis, It's very, very hard to find a good one. So when you do find a good one, you've got to pay a lot, a great deal for it. And of course, as you may remember, Kylie, the hot one was the Cooper S. So the Cooper
S is that the sporty one with a little cool steering wheel?
Yes, little cool steering wheel, had slightly different wheels that were a little bit wider, and had little spats on the side of the body, and it had that wonderful Cooper S badge on the boot lid, and they were just awesome little things because they were. For their day, in their day, they were really quick little cars, and of course they went round corners like they were on rails. So they sort of redefined motorsport in many ways. The little Mini.
Something I was just thinking about. What is the racetrack? I've just had a brain fade and I can't remember it. That's in Tasmania that Brabham and lots of other people raced at. Longford, the Longford race circuit.
Longford.
Yes.
That's right.
Have you ever been down here or talked to many people who you know knew much about Longford?
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, a good friend of mine lives in Launceston, and he and I have done a lot of business things together, a lot of rallying together, a lot of racing together. And when I've been down there, yeah, I've been across to where Longford was, yeah, yeah.
Because they had some pretty big names, you know, raced on that circuit. There's been, you know, a lot of people have phoned into the program, probably people, in fact, listening right now, because I know there's some followers who are in that region and in that kind of racing world that tune in for this particular segment.
Well, the amazing thing was that, and I had a couple of people with me yesterday, and they were talking about this exact thing. And one of those gentlemen that was with me yesterday was 78, and he was talking about that Longford track and about what happened at in Tasmania. And he said, you know, back in the day, you'd get people like absolute legends, like Jackie Ickx and Graham Hill were actually racing down there quite regularly, like, you know, once a year type thing. So they were making it, it was part of their circuit, if you like, of events to go and do. You know, and Graham Hill and Jackie Ickx are, I mean, they're, you know, gone now, all Graham Hill is. You know, they're icons of motorsport, absolute icons of motorsport. And they used to come and race there, you know.
Yeah, Sarah's texted into the program. She wants to know, she's thinking about buying an MGB, a rubber bumper. She said she thinks it's the late 1970s model. She's not 100% sure. She wants to know if they are more valuable or less valuable than the others.
Definitely less valuable. And you're a bit of a lover of MGB.
I am,
well,
it's true. I think I'd rather have an MGA if I was choosing, but I think they're getting a bit expensive.
Yeah, but I think maybe you actually had one, didn't you?
And I had one a long time ago. I had, I think mine was the rubber bumper now that I think about it. I can't even remember the year. It was British Racing Green and I was only 25, so it was a while back. And, so I loved it, but it just seemed to always need to go to the shop. Even though it looked fabulous, it always needed fine-tuning and just seemed a bit hard work in the end, to be honest.
Yeah, that is what a lot of people find because they do need a bit of work. They're what we call a sort of typical British Leyland car, which means that they look beautiful and they're very attractive. But when it came to putting them together, they probably weren't put together, you know, the best. But in answer to the lady's good question, the chrome bumper one, which is the earlier models, which is 63 right the way through to 74, the chrome bumper ones is the one to get. They're the ones that will actually eventually appreciating value, although it has to be said that MGBs, because so many were made, that they don't have a lot of appreciation in them in value-wise. But the rubber bumper one is definitely less attractive to investors and collectors than the chrome bumper one, the earlier one.
And what's that MG that has like a little luggage rack on the back and it's like really, really old? Is it maybe 1950s? What one's that?
I think you're probably thinking of the very early TF. The MGTF, they had the luggage rack on the back. But it has to be said, though, that quite a lot of MGBs also had a luggage rack. Many people put them on. It sort of clamped. There was a clamp that held it on from one side to the other. But a lot of people put chrome, racks on the boot lids,
Yeah, sort of a cute little feature. And so now if you were looking, by the way, if anybody wants to get their car valued, please text now 0438 922 936. If you've got something in the paddock, under the dust cover, you know, in the back of Grandpa's garage, and you're just thinking, oh, oh, what might it be worth? You don't have to divulge your name or anything like that, but please send me a text 0438 922 936. What have been some classic finds that you've come across in the last week since we last spoke, Mark?
Oh, look, there's been quite a few, to be honest. We've actually heard about a collection that we've never been to see, which is right up in the middle of Queensland. And I can't actually tell you the location, but we'll be going up there in a week or so. And
that's exciting.
It is, and there's about 1,100 cars there, and it sounds as though there's a lot of early British stuff there, so a lot of Minis. A lot of Morrises of different types, probably some MGBs, I would think.
Yes.
and some Triumphs. So, we've sort of seen a few pictures, but that's sounding pretty interesting and pretty exciting. And then we've come across, we bought a couple of early Range Rovers, because as you know, we do quite a bit with Range Rovers, and we bought a couple of those from far out back Western Australia earlier in the week too. So, yes, it's been a very interesting week in that regard.
That's an interesting collection, 1,100 cars. Are they all just like in paddocks, or how do you look after 1,100 cars?
Yeah, they're a bit of both. Some are inside, some are outside. So the ones to get, obviously, would be the ones that have been stored inside, but the other ones are just littered in paddocks. And we've seen a few shots from above, and they're scattered across a huge area. So it's going to be quite, we'll have to be up there for a long time, probably 3-4 days, I would say, to get an idea of what's there, you know.
I'm curious, do you ever, when you hear about amazing car collections, like that one, I'm not sure if it's amazing, but do you ever go onto Google Maps and then try and see if the updated version of the maps can actually, you know, show you just what might be lurking in paddocks and what kind of stock might exist?
Yeah, look, we've tried to sometimes, but we generally find that the Google Maps is a long way out of date time-wise. And that we did it earlier on in the piece when we first started out, and we found that the cars that were shown on Google Maps just weren't there.
Yeah, okay.
When we went there, it was too old. You know?
Disappointing.
Well, a little bit, yeah, when you travel all that distance, you know, because we've sort of travelled all over Australia picking stuff up. So, yeah, it was a bit of a worry.
Anthony's texted in. He said, I've got an average 1980 Alfa Sud, or an Alfa Sud, how do you say that, Sprint?
Alfa Sud, yeah.
An Alfa Sud Sprint. And he's also got a 1990 Toyota GT4, and he's curious to know the value of both of those.
Oh, the 1990 GT4 is off the Richter scale. I think you and I have spoken about GT4s before.
Yeah, that's right, we have. But they sort of, sometimes it goes, for me, it goes over my head a bit because they're just a lot of numbers. But, yeah, that's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, the one he's got is the good one. So in rough round figures with GT4s, there was three types. There was the ST165, which was the very early one. Then there was the ST185, which is one that he's got. And then there was the ST205, which is the roundy-shaped ones that we bought loads of last year. Interestingly enough, the ST205, the roundy shape, the last one, if you get the 2500 homologation ones, or one of those, they're worth now on car sales $200K, which is amazing.
Ooh, wow, that's a bit, yes.
But the gentleman's one that's a 185, there's also one on car sales, I'm told, for 170 or 160, I believe.
Hang on, is this the Toyota GT4?
Yeah, for his
right.
car, yeah.
170, yeah. Anthony, he'd be happy about that.
He'd be very happy with that because he would not have paid very much for that, because even as little as recently as last year, they were only worth 20, you know, 20 to 25 grand. So they've gone from that to 170 in a year. It's not bad, is it?
And what about his 1980 Alfa Sud Sprint?
Yeah, sadly, that hasn't done the same. They're a great little car, very underappreciated in this country. The handling and agility of the car is second to none for a car of that size. Not worth a huge amount, really, because a lot of people don't really know what they are here. But around about 20K for something like that, I would say.
If anyone wants to get a price, we haven't got long left, 0438 0800 922 936. Just text a few details, make, model, colour, K's if you can, or call if you just can't be bothered putting all that down in your phone. Just ring us up. So much easier. I don't know why people don't do that more often, actually.
The
number, yeah, the number to call. Then we can just chat with them. The number to call, 1300 222 936. We'll see if any extra text messages trickle in. But in the meantime, what does the next couple of weeks hold for you? We obviously chatted about it being 10 days only from Christmas.
Yes, I'm pretty scared by that. I didn't realise it was just around the corner.
Does that mean because you haven't bought anything for anyone?
well, that's definitely part of it. Yeah, I'll just have to get out to shops this weekend, I'd say. Yeah, it'll be a mad sort of rush from here till Christmas of acquiring a lot more vehicles and getting things ready. And then as we both know, you know, the month of January is pretty quiet for anyone in Australia. And really, arguably, it's going to be the first year when we're going to be returning to normal and everyone's going to be on their holidays, you know, not where they live. So for the last 3 years, you've had to do, you know, the month of January where you live. But we can go elsewhere now.
Yeah. Do that. Finally, here's a texter. I've got a 1952 Chevy pickup truck, 3100, if you know that means anything to you. It doesn't to me. They go on to say it's a 350 Chev motor, 9-inch diff, turbo 400 gearbox, electric seats, and the seats are all leather. The interior is in excellent condition. What do you think it might be worth?
Yeah, sadly, Kylie, it's a bit before my time.
The 52,
Yeah, 52. But in saying that, you know, they're very collectible, those vehicles, and sounds like that's been quite heavily modified. A lot of people love those vehicles and they'll pay anything. I mean, I can't really value it because I don't know enough about it, to be truthful. But I know that some people do pay anywhere up to about $80,000 for those vehicles.
There you go, whoever that texter was, anonymous texter, around 80K, but hard to say with the modifications. Adrian in Moriarty, or maybe he is Adrian and his last name is Moriarty, but anyway, I'm not sure. He's got a 1962 Ford Anglia, he says barn condition. I guess that's self-explanatory.
Yeah, it'd be a barn find. Isn't that amazing? My parents had a 1962 Anglia and I did all my early travelling around the United Kingdom in a 1962 Anglia.
Ah, you know them very well.
I certainly do. The good old 105E. They're a car that was mass produced in massive numbers, and sadly, you know, they're not worth a huge amount. But probably 25K for a car like that, I would say. Oh, actually, if it's in barn find, it's going to be a lot less. I mean, 25K restored, so it's going to be about $10,000 to $11,000 would be what that would be worth in barn find condition.
Yeah, okay. I'm hunting right now. I'm going to get Comfortably Numb up by Pink Floyd. That's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, sorry?
The song, the Pink Floyd song we talked about earlier.
Absolutely, Comfortably Numb.
Yeah, we're going to hunt that one down. But in the meantime, Jim says he's got a 1938 Ford in perfectly good order. That's way before your time, 38, isn't it? As far as valuation,
I'm really no good on anything before 1965. Really, just really don't know much about the cars from the earlier eras.
And there just wouldn't be many, would there? That's the other part of it, because there'd be no need to really know that much because they're not really traded as much.
No, that's right. And what's happened increasingly, and we're finding this with the 1960s and 1970s cars, we're finding that a lot of the people that loved cars from the 60s and 70s, there's less of those people around now and less of those. And some of the people that love those cars are kind of getting on in years. So the activity in the 60s and 70s cars is gradually decreasing and it's more moving heavily to 90s and 2000s. Well, 80s, 90s and 2000s where we're finding most of the activity now, particularly with the Japanese cars. As you know, we're doing a lot with them. Big activity with the 80s and 90s Jap cars.
Well, Mark, it's been lovely chatting with you all year on this program and, you know, it's been such a pleasure. So thanks for taking the time to chat each week. We've had so many interesting text messages and conversations over the course of the last 6 months, that's for sure. So I hope you have a great Christmas and once again, thanks for being a part of the ABC.
Yeah, look, it's been absolutely wonderful. It's been a fantastic opportunity. I've really enjoyed it. I've enjoyed talking to all the people that have called in and also valuing their cars for them. It's been a real pleasure. I really enjoyed it. And you have a wonderful Christmas too, Kylie, and all the best to everyone down there in Tasmania.
Thank you. And hopefully we'll revisit in 2023.
I would love to do that, Kylie. I'd love to do that.
Mark Habittle there from Supercar Secrets. He is our regular classic car talkback guest. This is for all the Pink Floyd fans.